One, two, three, four.
Everybody, let's snap along. Start snapping while you sing. You can't go wrong. It will brighten everything.
You'll find
that singing's contagious. Spread it all around. You'll find that simply outrageous how the world will love the sound. So stop and shout. Oh yeah!
Welcome to the Power of Singing podcast. My name is Joyce Wells, and I am so happy to be hosting this third season of our podcast, which is entitled The Power of Children Singing. I wore my best children's earrings today. In the words of the great Ella Fitzgerald, who had no children of her own, but spent so much of her energy teaching children and passing music on to children, the only thing better than singing is more singing. And in that spirit, our intention in creating this podcast is to encourage you to sing anytime, anywhere, all the time, everywhere, alone, with other people, with your pets, with your plants. In other words, just sing. Start singing. Keep singing. Or enjoy listening to singing. Connect to singing in whatever way works best for you. Singing is beneficial for you and the world around you. We're recording this live on Zoom on August 21st, 2023. And we are the five members of the Santosha Voice Group. Santosha means contentment. The Santosha Voice Group provides expert information, inspiration, and opportunities related to singing for all levels of singers. So whether you're a professional, an emerging professional, an amateur, meaning you do it just because you love it, or you literally only sing when no one is around, the Santosha Voice Group offers something doable and accessible for you. We believe that singing is powerful and life-transforming. Check out our website at santoshavoicegroup.com. That's S-A-N-T-O-S-H-A voicegroup.com. And now I will introduce you to who we are individually. Heather Fetro is a professional classical soprano and voice teacher from the Washington, D.C. area. Heather specializes in music by women composers and is an active freelance soprano in the classical world. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Joseph Garate is a wonderful tenor and voice teacher based in Southern California, where he sings classical gigs all over the area, is the lead singer and writer for the band Diamonds, and is a DJ. Joseph also writes deeply personal songs and is especially passionate about music for people with special needs. And Joseph has an 8-year-old son.
Thank you so much.
Hi, Joseph.
Hello.
Rich McKinney is a composer, pianist, and choral conductor living in Missouri. Rich teaches composition and composes for local choirs and has a YouTube channel that features his piano interpretations. He was a singer before losing his vocal cords to Agent Orange exposure in Vietnam. Yet his love for music and his commitment to serving it continues to reverberate in the world. Welcome, Rich.
Thank you.
Susan Mohini Kane is the founder of the Santosha Voice Group. After successful careers as an opera singer and a college professor, Susan began channeling her extensive talents and skills into becoming a singer-songwriter and teacher, spreading the joy of singing wherever she goes. Susan has just completed her first album of original songs called Waking Up in Wonderland, which you can find on Spotify, or you can find out more about at susanmohinikane.com. The album will be released on November 17th, 2023. Welcome, Susan, and congratulations.
Thank you.
And I'm Joyce Wells, a singer, songwriter, and vocal coach living in upstate New York. After studying, performing, and teaching in many different genres, from classical to folk to Eastern music in the Vedic tradition, my focus now as a vocal coach is on supporting anyone of any age or any walk of life to enjoy your sound, for speaking or for singing. You can find out more at enjoyyoursound.com. And you can learn more about all of us on the santoshavoicegroup.com website. Today's topic is why children sing. And leading us on this topic today is Susan Mohini Kane. You're on, Susan.
Thank you so much, Joyce. Really enjoying, have been enjoying preparing for this season of podcasts, because what is more delightful than listening to children singing and thinking about children singing? I know that it's the one thing that really stops your mind. When you're walking out in the world and then you hear a little child start to sing, everybody just goes, and they just stop and listen for a second. And so I think it's quite powerful, actually. One of the things that I did when I wrote a book that was published in 2015 called The 21st Century Singer. And one of the things I ask, it's a workbook for singers, is I ask all the singers to think about what their very first memory of singing was. If they can think way, 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 way back into their deep recesses of their minds about what it is that caused them to first open their mouths and sing. And it's very interesting. Everybody's answer is so different. So everybody just takes a few minutes to be quiet. Maybe I give them 3 minutes and then I have them write in their journals. And then they come up with these stories of what their first memory is. And then I ask the question, when you're singing now in life, are you still motivated by the same thing that motivated you when you first opened your mouth to sing as a baby? And almost always it is that. So that is going to be my question for discussion later for all of us. I was going to really quickly kind of share two little memories of my own. One is that when I was 7, I wrote a song. So it's called When You're Down and Feeling Blue. That's what it's called. When you're down and feeling blue, come to me. I'll cheer you up. I can sing for you to listen. Come with me. We'll sing this song. God loves you and I love you. So come on, let's cheer up. God loves you and I love you. Now you're happy as a little pup. And I think that's quite genius lyrics there for a little 7-year-old. But I wrote it because the people around me were sad. The people around me in my life when I was growing up, they were really sad and they were angry and they were acting out against each other. And I wanted them to cheer up. Please cheer up. And I was just 7 and I still knew that if I sang that song, people would cheer up, and they did. And when I thought back to my very, very first memory, I used music to cheer myself up. So, you know, when you're a little kid and you're laying in bed, nighttime is really a big deal, right? You're laying in bed, it's nighttime, you're hearing all these noises. And for me, I was hearing noises of people fighting often, and I was scared. And so my first memory of singing was just doing, and just like humming to myself to try to, and closing my eyes and just listening inside my head, humming to myself so that I would just be relaxed. And I would pet myself. I would pet my tummy. I would just rub my tummy and hum to myself, and I would go to sleep. And so I find this idea of comforting so important, how music can comfort you and can take away your fear, or can make you happier, or make you content like Santosha. Anyway, that's one of my stories. My second story is that these memories, the first memory of singing, can happen even when you are before you're born, when you're in the womb. And this is the story of that kind of a memory for me. So when I went to college, at the University of Iowa as a music major. And the very first concert of the season in the fall at the Big Hancher Auditorium was going to be Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 2. And my piano teacher was going to be playing the solo, and it was very exciting, you know. So it was my first orchestra concert, live orchestra concert, with a piano soloist. So I was very excited. I got in my seat and the orchestra tuned up and the lights went down. The first note of the concert started and something in me just welled up and I started to cry almost immediately. And it's like a 20-minute piece, right? I cried, sobbed hard for that whole piece. And I had no idea why I sobbed. But I knew I fell in love with this piece. So after the concert, I went and I bought the record album. This is how long ago it was. And I played it nonstop until I went home from college for Christmas. And I told my mom, you've got to listen to this music. So I set her down in the living room and put on the record. As soon as the first note started, my mom started sobbing. And she was crying and crying all the way through it. And I just couldn't believe it. And afterwards, she said, I have a story to tell you. When I was pregnant with you, I pulled my back and slipped two or three discs in my back, she said, and had to go to the hospital and had to go into traction for my whole 9th month of pregnancy. And because it was at that time, they wouldn't give painkillers. And so I don't know if anybody's ever had a slipped disc or back problems. It was excruciatingly painful. And she had a big old baby in her. And so she said, so I was in traction and I was in excruciating pain. And I was very, you know, very, very upset. And the only thing that would take the pain away was that your father would bring in a record player. And we only had one record. And it was Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 2. Mm-hmm. And I listened to it over and over and over again for the last month of my pregnancy with you. And I just can't even believe how something in me remembered that. Mm-hmm. You know, even though I was in the womb. It's an actual real experience. I mean, you hear stories. You know, the moms put their headphones on their babies, on their tummies, so the babies can listen. But I think what I remembered from it was pain. What I remembered from it was pain and sadness, because that was what was happening inside my mom's body when she was listening to this. And she would get a little relief. So there was this sadness that happened there. It also continued because she couldn't hold me afterwards. And so I would be in the room, but I couldn't. No matter how much I cried, she couldn't pick me up or hold me. She couldn't feed me. And so I think that may have been, I mean, I've thought about it over the years. And I think because I didn't cry for it, I couldn't get attention if I cried, I learned how to comfort myself. And therefore, I did sing little lullabies to myself later in life. And I think, I mean, I don't mean for this to be super sad, because I really feel that it was very powerful. The memory of the music, the power of the music, and how it got me through my childhood in such a beautiful way and got me to this point in my life where my whole life is dedicated to music and to singing. So very, very powerful time. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it.
Beautiful story.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and introduce the song, the songs now. I wanted to get children singing, like the idea that of when I was a child, how I just sang. There was no music and no one taught me anything. I just sang. And I happen to have a goddaughter that I'm just madly in love with. Her name is Ella. And I've known her since before she was born. And of course, you know, whenever she does anything cute, you know, we all have our iPhones and our videos. And so I have videoed her since she was little. I'm going to play a little teeny clips of Ella singing, age 4, age 5, age 6, age 7, and age 8. And they're teeny little clips. All right. So this first clip is of Ella at age four, her dad is a conductor. And so she is conducting an orchestra in her mind, standing on a rock in the park. And this is Ella conducting. So now here is, so you see in this one, in that last one, she didn't have any words to it. She was just hearing this orchestra in her head and she was singing bum, bum, bum. Here is now age five, and she's got a bunch of little, now she's been to school now, and now she has a whole bunch of little children's songs she's singing. See if you can catch any of the children's songs in this little Ella improv at age five. At the end, you might can't hear it. I just love to sing, she says. So that's age five. So she's now started to add, you know, her language to it and the songs that she's learned, but she's still having so much fun. Now here comes age six, and she wrote a monster song about nighttime.
Please go away, you suffering monster, till I've been crying. So I am too. And the first time I was scared. So go away, please, now.
That's a going away monster song. For when she is, that's the monster song was when she was age six. So she's already starting to create and write songs. And now age seven, you can feel that it's a little bit more sophisticated musically, and it's another song she wrote called The Night Song.
The moonlight shines in the night. The stars light up the night. And in the night, it's peace. And the next thing you know, you are fast asleep.
I love the little bit of vibrato she puts on at the end there. But that's an actual arch to that whole song. You can tell that she's actually made a little a real sophisticated musical thought. And she was able to then have a nice cadence at the end. And that's age seven, right? So we know now by age seven, you can actually do that kind of stuff. And then by the time she's age eight, and this, I'm only going to play a little bit of it, but she was doing an improv and I just started making chords on the piano that she could sing to. So then she can start now coordinating and improvising to a structure on the piano. This is Animals of Life. All right, so it goes, I'm going to leave that there. But the idea there was that she was able to react with me now. right, with the piano now. And that song that she wrote, the Animals of Life song at the end, she wrote it because I sang her a lullaby about two babes in the woods that get lost and they die. And she's like, oh, no, no, two babes in the woods are not going to get lost and die. The animals are going to come around and they're going to save her. And I was scared after midnight, but the animals came and they saved me. And we had a party in the night. And she's like, no, you're not singing that sad stuff for me.
How old was she for that very last one?
8.
Okay.
Beautiful.
8. Yeah. And we made a big video of it, which I'll put on the website so you guys can all, I'll put on the YouTube channel so you can all see it. She wanted to have wolves howling, and the wolves howling were actually friends of hers in the night. And, you know, they were happy and celebrating, and she wasn't scared anymore. And I was humbled by that. And actually, you know, she's taught me so many things over my life. And I love that she did that for me. So that was my song. And
beautiful, beautifully creative on her part too.
Yeah.
I'd love to meet her.
Thank you. Yeah. Go ahead. You guys can go ahead and open your mics and say anything about them, about what you've just heard from Ella.
I love the way I'm sorry, Richard, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I love the way that you structured this out, kind of tracking her development. And it was, you know, as a singer and her voice and her creativity. I mean, it's fantastic that you have that, kind of documented through the years. You know, it's really amazing to see that progression.
Yeah, it's fun to hear the sound, isn't it? Thank you. I was shocked I had that many. Yeah, I'm obsessed with that child. All right, go ahead. Thank you, Joseph.
You want to say, I think her tone from the very beginning is exceptional and really, I mean, it just catches your ear right away, and it improves as you go through the ages, which of course it would. But amazing body of is a really big, gorgeous voice. I would send her to me if you get tired of her.
Okay, I will.
I mean, I love the way before, you know, by the time she was 8, even when she was 7, I could hear her making what I would have to call artistic choices, you know, like there were dynamic swells and phrases and things that, you know, I mean, clearly she has a gift. And it does show by that age, and it's already starting to develop. So yeah, I found it quite compelling.
Nice. Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you guys. I'm going to go ahead and I guess I'll just go ahead and do the discussion.
The question.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So I've already given you the question at the very, very beginning of this episode, which is, what was your very first memory of singing? Where were you? Who were you with? Do you remember why you first opened your mouth and started to make a sound? And are you still singing for something similar? So
I would love to jump in and answer this one. I did this in your class, actually, Susan. So I already had my answer from class. So this is easy for me. But it's fun to talk about it again, because you never know when you talk about it again, maybe something else will hit you. But my song was the Itsy Bitsy Spider. And I remember singing it with my grandfather. And we would be in his house at the kitchen table where all good things happen, right? And we would be doing the little motions that go, everybody can do this at home, where, you know, you take, I was probably not doing it right, but your thumb and your pinky finger, and you do it back and forth. And my grandpa was teaching that to me. And I probably just started out doing that, right? And then I realized, oh, there was a song that went with that, you know? And the song, as I started thinking about it, is all about persistence, right? Because this silly little spider goes all the way to the top, right, of this spout, and it always rains, comes all the way down, washes him out of the spout. But what does he do? The next day, he or she gets up and climbs all the way up the spout again. And I think that that is true, especially of my singing life, because it's not easy being a professional singer. You know, as many of you out there might know, if you are a singer, you know, a lot of times you have to be your own biggest cheerleader, because you don't always get those people in your court. You know, when you get them though, you treasure them. And I'm treasuring all these people on this podcast right now, because these have been a community of people for me. So, but that is my story. And my grandfather was somebody too, who always had music going. He was a music teacher, music educator, and he played trumpet until he was in his 90s. He would play for veterans' funerals because he was a veteran himself. And so he was the person who really, really planted a lot of seeds. And even when he was older, you know, I was just talking to him about the children's choir I was with. He'd love to hear about the children. He loved to hear about what they were doing. And he said, why don't you write a musical, you know, for your children's choir? So he was always kind of pushing me to the next level. Oh, I don't know why I don't do that. You know, time, right? was probably my answer. But he was always good at planting those seeds of like, yeah, keep trying, you know, do it. So yep. Thanks, Grandpa.
Beautiful, beautiful. And that's a memory of your grandpa forever. This is kind of embedded in you. How wonderful. Thanks, Heather.
Thanks.
I thought about this for a long time, and there is just no way for me to, I just don't remember when I didn't sing. And I don't remember, you know, and I know you're not exactly asking that, but you're asking what's your first memory of it. And I'm like, well, I don't know. I just don't remember when it wasn't there. But if I really, you know, want to push for something, I do have my first memory was actually, I think, you know, singing rounds with my siblings and just, you know, of course we did Itsy Bitsy Spider and all those kinds of things. And I'm sure I was singing before that, but that's the first kind of concrete memory that I have. And, I'll say more about that when I do my little story, but yeah, it was about of doing it together with my siblings, and it was just, you know, just like falling off a log. I mean, we just did it.
And it was what was your feeling? What do you remember for the feeling?
Oh, it just absolute absorption. I mean, I was always, you know, absorbed in music. I couldn't think, it didn't seem to me that there was anything else that had the same kind of value or the same kind of attraction to me as singing and music did. It just, I would just be totally absorbed in it. And it just was kind of, you know, like breathing. I mean, it just, it was the feeling. And yes, there are times when I sing now and that is the motivation, and when I make music, and there are other times when it isn't. And actually, I loved your asking that part of the question, because that for me has been for quite a while, it's a kind of a barometer to sort of see where am I at. And if I'm not singing with that feeling or with that motivation, why not? And what's the point of what I'm doing? You know, it's, and then there are other times where I'll also notice that something will happen and I don't really know. Sometimes I know what it is. Sometimes I don't. And all of a sudden I cannot help myself but sing. There's just, you know, and it comes from exactly that place. It's just like you burst into song because, you know, something good happened, or you became, you know, there was some feeling of freedom or of joy. And it's just the first thing that happens is you sing.
Yeah.
So that's my relationship to that part of your question.
Beautiful. Thank you, Joyce. Richie, why don't you unmute?
I think we are always affected by certain events. And there are, you know, like concerts, for example, we mark those in our memory, or singing for somebody's birthday party, or hearing something that really just moved us. And I think all of those influences collect and create a memory bank that we're not even aware of, perhaps. And we'll hear songs sometimes, and we don't know where they came from, how they got in our head. But I often listen to songs of the 30s and 40s. And I can play them, but I have no idea what the name of them are. You know, they just go by. So I think it's important for us to hear other people and learn that we can sing as well as they can. So there, you know, when we get into the competition and all, there are levels and all that kind of thing. But the truth is, everybody can sing. And if I ever hear a music teacher telling some child to just move their lips, I will probably be put in jail for the rest of my life.
Awesome. Thank you, Rich. That's very sweet. And a little scary. No, just
I don't know why. I'll answer the question best I can. I don't know why I remember this. It's so random, and there probably are. If I really searched my memory, I could probably find something that might have been earlier. But this is one of the most significant things, and one of the earliest memories for me was probably being probably around three. And you know how like kids that are around that age have, sometimes they have those like horse things that you kind of like, you know, in the corner of your living room or something that you kind of go up and down on, and it's like on springs, and it kind of, for some reason, I remember one afternoon, I don't know if my mom was making dinner or something like that, or one evening, I remember being on this horse for, had to have been like 2 hours. And, you know, who knows? What I remember was that I was listening to the sound. Maybe it was, I don't know if it was a old, you know, it's something from the 80s. So it's like very kind of rickety, and, you know, they had not super sophisticated, you know, gears and things like that then, but they had, you know, it was on springs. And when you're listening to, when you're a little kid with an imagination and a really kind of open mind, I guess, and you're listening to the sound of these springs getting, you know, stretched and compressed and stretched and compressed, and you're hearing it also in a very specific rhythm because you're bouncing on it, you're hearing all of these weird kind of interesting frequencies that are kind of, sometimes they're haunting, sometimes they're beautiful, sometimes they're dissonant, sometimes they're harmonious. And, you know, it's the kind of thing that as an adult, you just kind of listen to and you're like, oh, that's springs, you know, whatever. But when you're three, it's the most kind of strangely evocative. I mean, it sounds like it could be an organ in a cathedral. It sounds like it could be the sound of the ocean. You know, you know, it's this kind of haunting sound. And I remember that I improvised a song, you know, not unlike, you know, Ella, you know, I just improvised the song and I improvised these words and this poetry by myself for like 2 hours. And I never asked anybody to come listen to it. I didn't ask anybody, you know, this is like the 80s. So I didn't ask anybody to record it or anything. I wasn't interested in that. It was one of those very first feelings of like, kind of what you said, Joyce, this like total absorption in what I was doing. And it felt kind of endless, like it could be endless, you know? And it was really one of the first times I ever remember having that feeling. And what's funny about your question too, Susan, is that like, I do think that it's basically the same for me now, you know, this kind of just, I just need to kind of escape into this weird, this strange kind of haunted kind of sounding, you know, rhythmic, you know, meditative, you know, cathedral of sounds, you know, and I'm basically the same person. And then sometimes I don't even care if someone hears it, you know, and it's funny because that, I think that has like influenced even my aesthetic to this day. I still use spring reverb a lot on a lot of my, it's so strange, you know, on a lot of my recordings. So anyway, that's a very vivid, very kind of random, but very vivid memory for me. So.
Beautiful. Awesome. These things, since they're so early in our development, they go into some sort of a subconscious place, and they reveal themselves at whatever time they do, you know. Anyway, that's my offering for today, Joyce. Thank you for being such a great host, and I'll let you wrap it up.
Well, thank you so much, Susan. Thank you, all of you, for participating in our discussion. And thank you to everyone who is listening. And thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Power of Singing podcast, season 3, The Power of Children Singing. You can hear all 5 of the episodes wherever you get your podcasts. To learn more about our group members, please visit our podcast page on our website, santoshavoicegroup.com, SANTOSHA. May your day be filled with the joy that is so natural to all of us as children. It is still there. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye. Bye. Bye.